Blog Talk Radio.
You think the people of this country exist to provide you with position. I think your position exists to provide those people with freedom.
Indeed. Freedom. Isn't that what the whole idea was all about? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's Monday night, and of course that means the Constitution Hour. I want to welcome all of our listeners, all of my guests in the chat room, Doc, Miss Linda, Mr. Rod Luke, my good friend out in Arizona, and everybody that's listening that isn't in the chat room. You know, we had a great conversation Saturday night, Miss Linda and Mike and I, at the end of Mike's show. For those of you not familiar, Mike does a show, Mikey B., here on Blog Talk Radio. The hot seat left is never right, Saturday evenings at 9 o'clock. And if you've not tuned in to listen to Mike's show, I would recommend that you do. Mike's been doing it for a while, and he does a tremendous job. Unlike yours truly, he does a lot of preparation for his show. It's always very informative. And he puts a lot of time and effort into the show. Just a great guy. And an all-around good hot seat is a great name. A good venue, I think. And he puts people under pressure, as we all should. And speak of the devil, his ears must have been burning. There's my buddy Mikey B right there signing in the chat room. Mike, welcome aboard. Mike had sent me an email the other day and asked me to forward him some information for his show. And unfortunately, I did not read the email until this evening. I just had a lot going on and my email box was overrun. But it was interesting what he sent me after I read it, because it was something that I was planning on talking about this evening to kind of dovetail into the conversation we had Saturday in the archives on Mike's show. Oh, man. Well, we don't want to wake the babies, and Mike, I appreciate the baby pictures. They're absolutely adorable, and the little girl has just, she's gorgeous. The eyelashes, the big eyes, she's absolutely, they're both gorgeous. But and I'm a sucker for babies. So good job, Dad. We were talking about taxes and sequestration and the economy and what I believe is going on in the monetary system. And what Mike had asked me to help with was what the roll call vote was on sequestration. And as many of you may remember, should remember, that back in 2011, we had the sequestration vote, or the vote to raise the debt limit, right? And they agreed, of course, Congress agreed to raise the debt limit, one-time deal, we were told, provided that the government would get serious about spending cuts. That's what we heard. That's what we've been told. And if they didn't get serious about spending cuts, there was this automatic thing that was going to kick in. Now, I can tell you that there is damn precious little in Washington, D.C. that is automatic, except for the fleecing of the taxpayers. That is taken for granted. You're going to get fleeced, hosed, and bent over at the hip socket, whether you know it or not, whether you want it or not, whether you like it or not. And that really got me to thinking today. We are supposed to have a representative form of government, both at the state level and at the federal level. So I got to thinking about that, and I thought, well, how is it I am being represented? How are my interests, how am I being represented by my congressman, my representative, and furthermore, my senator, although I think most of us would agree here that it's really not the senator's job to represent me. Technically, the senator is supposed to represent the interests of the state. But that all got shot to hell with the 17th Amendment. So, we have two bodies of representation. And I got to tell you, from where I sit, as one of the evil rich, I guess, and I got to tell you, even in that venue, I'm one of the very rare. I've got to be in the like one half of one percentile. Not because I make millions of dollars a year, because I don't, but because I am one of those very rare individuals, my wife and I together, who are wage earners that are in the higher bracket, the two of us together. And we both put in a lot of time and effort to get where we're at. And we're being richly rewarded by being robbed at gunpoint. And of course, they want more. But anyway, back to the topic at hand. How in the hell am I being represented? Because from where I sit, the only thing, the only discussion in D.C. that concerns me is how best to spend my money. And it certainly seems that the discussion is how to relieve me of more of my property. And I read an article, it was on the Godfather of Politics, and I thought it was very informative. I'm going to post a link to that article right now. And the article was, why don't we replace the tax code with a national lottery? And I think the article makes some absolutely perfect points. The United States has an all-voluntary military, so why not an all-voluntary tax system? After all, aren't liberals all about freedom of choice? Their sloganeering includes the operating premise, my body, my choice. So why not extend that notion of what's mine and you can't touch to property? My land, my choice, my money, my choice. Well, I think that's a fabulous idea, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, we have all these people out here. Actually, technically, Mike, that's not correct. Mike put out, technically, filing taxes is voluntary, however they insist you volunteer. What the Supreme Court has ruled is that the term voluntary in relation to the income tax doesn't mean that you can volunteer to pay or not to pay. No, what it means is that you voluntarily pay the tax without being forced at gunpoint or put in prison. However, if you express your discontent and you express that you're paying the tax but not voluntarily but under duress, then it is not voluntary. And that's about the extent of the voluntary when it comes to taxes. But honestly, should we not have a truly voluntary tax system? Isn't that the pinnacle, right, of individual liberty? The original income tax that was instituted under my personal hero, Abraham Stinkin' Lincoln, the form was real simple, and you could simply declare that you did not have any income exceeding, I believe the amount was $600 or $800 at the time, and you were taken at your word, period. End of conversation. I suppose that Mr. Lincoln was too busy sending out hordes of troops to roust the Maryland delegates from their bedchambers so that they couldn't vote on secession. He was far too busy to send out revenue agents to harass the throngs of people at the time. I really think that a voluntary system of taxation or funding our government, aside from the already voluntary system that's in place when it comes to corporate taxes, consumption or use taxes, excise taxes, those are all voluntary taxes. You know, the you can avoid the tax on alcohol by A, not buying any alcohol and consuming it, or by B, making your own alcohol for your own personal consumption. And the same is said of the motor fuels tax. You can ride a bicycle, you can walk. Hell, these days you can even take public transportation, but I would argue that at least a portion of those proceeds are going to end up paying that tax on motor fuels one way or another. But you get the point. You can choose to participate in that system, or you can choose not to. Well, I disagree. You can avoid income taxes too, just don't earn any, earn any income, and we could get into, I could digress into the definition of income, but that's really not the point. We have certain rights, God-given rights, and one of those rights the founders fully recognized. John Locke recognized it. Adam Smith recognized it in his Wealth of Nations, and that is that the one fundamental right, the one property that every man has, the most simple-minded, educated man alive, the one property that is inviolate is our ability to labor. Hands is the single most sacred of all property. And yet the government believes that it belongs to them. And that's really what we're talking about. You have a right of occupation. And this is why the Internal Revenue System of the 1960s was not about taxing those individuals that earned their living not as a matter of right, but as a matter of privilege. Now, how could they be working at a privileged job? Very simple. They work for the government in some way, shape, or form. Because, you see, we have a right of occupation, but that does not include the right to work for a government. For the government to serve the people is a privilege, it's not a right. And I'm sorry if you guys are hearing background noise, there's literally nothing going on. Sometimes the Skype really gets jacked up, unfortunately, and I apologize for that. We just do, yes, I'm in Skype. If it's going to continue, I'm going to call back in on the phone. Give me just a moment, guys, and I'm going to call in on the telephone. That'll clear it up, so bear with me just a moment. The damn phone from running.
I am politically incorrect and damn proud of it. I love my country, but I'm scared to death of its government. You believe what you read because it's all that we give you. Because all our history is written by whales. I'm engaged in a frenzy of mass self-destruction. And I feed upon your famine to fuel my corruption. I'm wholesaling hatred and international incest to carnivorous hyenas in a global death fest. I've mastered the arts of death and foreign nation genocide. Those who turn on me commit national suicide.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. So hopefully this is going to get us rocking here. We should have put a little bit of music going there. Open mic. Works. Well, it must be Blog Talk then, and not Skype, because I called in on a landline. Go figure. Well, I'm on the landline now. Well, it really stinks that we're having audio problems. I'm just going to continue on. You know, if you guys want to listen in, maybe call it audio quality through BTR. I don't know. I know last time when this happened on Mike's show, it did not help one bit. All the guest callers, we could hear each other okay. Well, you can if you want, but I am online. Don't know if you guys can, okay, good. Rod said that was clear. May dump the show, what the heck. It's not the end of the world. But I like the idea of funding government through a national lottery. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a fabulous idea. Of course, the parasite class wouldn't have that for a moment because they know that those who are, by and large, the beneficiaries of their progressive ideology, well, let's face it, they probably wouldn't be contributing. Nonetheless, I digress. Back to this sequestration issue. You all remember the fight. We had the debt ceiling crisis. The fiscal ledge, as I called it, because I refused to refer to it as the cliff that they continued to make it out to be. But the sequestration was purely and simply a dog and pony show. The Republicans got played. If they honestly believed that sequestration wasn't going to happen, or if they honestly believed that the super committee was going to work. And, of course, they didn't believe that the super committee was going to work. And I know that they didn't believe it because immediately after and even before the Republican congressional budgetary guru, Mr. Paul Ryan, that is correct, Mike, he put together a plan with John Boehner to avoid the sequestration and to offer up more nonsensical cuts, which you can't even call it spending cuts. And they just can't even be damned honest about it. The so-called cuts that they keep yapping on about is nothing more than a reduction in the increase in spending. I don't even know how the hell you can call it a reduction in the increase. So instead of increasing our spending by the proposed 27%, we'll only increase it by 25%. What a gift they give to you. And, ladies and gentlemen, don't worry about it, because in order to pay for this draconian measure, well, we'll just raise taxes. And I'm wondering, you know, we keep hearing about all these furlough days and all the furlough that's going to go on. Can we get some furlough going on in the White House? Can we maybe furlough some of our pomp and majesty that is going on? I got an idea. How about we furlough the FLOTUS, the First Lady of the United States, and let's furlough her entire staff, because after all, it's not an official office, and we don't believe in titles of nobility, so clearly this is just an honorary thing, and it's not an actual title. But you can rest assured that Congress is appropriating monies to fund this office. So, you know, let's cut funding to an unelected, non-bureaucrat, the queen bee of the honey hole that has become 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Let's just cut the funding off for that. We don't need it. But see, that would fly in the face of the logic and reason that all of Congress wants you to believe. And that is that, my God, the federal government is absolutely necessary for your very existence. If they were not spending all of your money, well, what would you do? If you did not have the 535 members and their massive staff and all the bureaucratic agencies that they have created, what would you do? How would you live? How, prior to the formation of all of these agencies and the current federal government, life as we know it was relegated to, you know, rocks and living in a cave and men dragging their newfound partners in by the hair. We've evolved, haven't we? Haven't we evolved to the point where we can now hold our heads up high, put our noses in the air, and walk about like we were European? Oh, wait, most of us are European. You know, it's not going to stop. It's really not. They don't want to cut it. They can't possibly cut it. And the ruling class is coming on and telling you it's just going to be disastrous. Disastrous, ladies and gentlemen, if we follow through with this sequestration. We are talking about $44 billion in actual reduction of spending. Neighborhood of $3.7 trillion. that's hard to get your mind around figures like that, because we really don't have anything to put that in perspective. So the easiest way to put it in perspective is to say that you got $3,700 in your pocket, and you're going to have to trim your budget for that $3,700 by $44. Or you could say you had $370, you're going to have to trim it by $4.40. That's the reality of the situation. Now, Congress and the President would have you believe that this is a tragedy, draconian. The world, the universe, my God, is going to end if we allow these sequestration measures to go forward. I haven't heard anyone, including the President, say anything about the $600 billion tax increase that he put upon the American working public just in the last few months. $600 billion in taxes is no big deal at all. But $44 billion in cuts is the end of the road. It's their Rubicon. My God, how could we possibly be so verbose, so obtuse? And my God, how could we possibly... Mr. Michael, is that you, sir?
Yes, it is, Ron. I hope we're not getting an echo here.
Yeah, I'm hearing myself repeated back.
Okay, how are we doing?
Oh, that is much better, Michael. How are you, Mr. Michael? I haven't heard from you in a while, sir.
Yes, it's been a wildly winter up here. We have a lot of snow up here in the frozen tundra of the Upper Peninsula, and I am currently in the middle of cooking dinner for my hungry wife, who worked 12 hours today. But I'm calling because you mentioned that amount of $44 billion, okay?
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to inform you and our listeners out there, if they have not heard, but the amount that Mr. Bernanke is spending on mortgage-backed security has been raised all the way up from what was originally $40 billion to $85 billion. So that 44 almost seems like a drop in the bucket, Ron.
Well, because that $85 billion is per month that Bernanke is authorized to spend on monetizing the U.S. debt. Not that it wasn't monetized at its inception, but that digresses into a whole other thing. But the $44 billion is actually true spending reduction, if you will. The sum total of the sequestration, the goal is $85 billion, but only $44 billion of that is actually a reduction in the increase that they had planned on. And it's just, you know, we see the same old fear-mongering tactics. And everybody's doing it. Everyone's going along with it. I'm hearing it here in my state about, oh my God, we're going to have to shut down McCollum Airport, a local airport over here, because, well, we just can't afford to keep the air traffic controllers around. As if the only way that a small local airport could survive is if the federal government paid for these damn air traffic controllers. Is there something wrong with free enterprise? I mean, honestly, is there something wrong with free enterprise in this country? Well, sure. The problem is we've legislated our way out of it. You're not allowed to have free enterprise when it comes to individual private aircraft.
Well, or any other business, for that matter, you know, Obamacare has pretty much put an end to anybody being able to have a business and make a success out of it when you are forced to pay, you know, humongous amounts.
Well, isn't this the same thing that was done with Social Security in the beginning by Roosevelt?
I would say so.
Absolutely so. You know, this was the argument that I kept trying to tell everyone when the argument was going on and everybody was getting their hopes up falsely that, it's going to get shot down over in the governor down in Florida that, you know, they're gonna rule it unconstitutional. And I told anybody and everybody that would listen, that hasn't got a snowball's chance in Hades of getting ruled unconstitutional, because it's no doggone different than Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. Look, Medicare and Medicaid were piggybacked onto the Social Security bill. To put away for future benefits in retirement is any different than taxing their paycheck to fund health care, which is a future benefit. Whether it's, and believe me, at some point in time, it's going to come down to, it's going to merge with Medicare and Medicaid. You can mark my words on this, and you heard it right here on the Constitution Hour. The whole wording of the Obamacare legislation is designed, was from the ground up at the very beginning, meant to force us into a single-payer system. They knew that the states, many of them, would vote down these medical changes. So the federal government was going to provide the funding for it, or at least part of it. So when that happens, then Obamacare becomes essentially nothing more than a taxing scheme. So they were absolutely correct in ruling the tax, because that's exactly what it is. And no, it will not collapse in on itself, Miss Linda. That is where we're making a mistake, I do believe, in the that or believe that are wrong. It would be a structure, and it would be Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And guess where the cost is going to be passed on to? You got it, the employee. And they're going to raise your rate. Currently, you're paying 6 or 8% of your wages, and the employer pays a matching percentage. That's going to increase, okay, to 16 to 20% with the employer matching, and you will have your single-payer system. Mark my words on that. That was the design from the get-go.
Ron.
Yes, sir.
I have to leave my telephone conversation here. I will be listening, but I have to finish off my dinner here with the wife.
Not a problem. Thank you for calling in, Michael.
Thank you for taking my call, Ron. God bless.
You bet.
Everyone.
God bless you. So again, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, let's step back and let's think about this for a moment. You're going to have all of your health care run through the same bureaucracy that's in place now for running Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Mark my words. This was the intent from the outset. I have no question in my mind whatsoever. Go read the damn thing. It's going to get merged. I don't know how anyone can read that health care bill and not recognize that when it fails, and fail it will, that there is going to be exactly what we're seeing surrounding sequestration now, all right? There's going to be this mad dash, this running around like chickens with heads cut off, that we have to save Americans' health care. And we're going to hear all the arguments all over again, and it's not going away. It will come back. It will never leave. It will just get rehashed. A jot here, a title there, a tittle there, and what do you know? You have it incorporated into Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And if you think that there is rampant fraud in the Medicare and Medicaid system today, my God, wait until all 300 plus million Americans and all of the illegals and anybody else who wants to come in, wait until everybody is covered under one universal system that covers everything and everyone. I'm telling you, it's just as plain as the nose on my face, and I don't know why none of these stupid pundits aren't talking about it. It's game, set, and match, and it has been for a long time. You know, the conversation, Mike and Linda, that we had in the archives the other night, I have no doubt, and I'm going to clue everybody into that conversation, and the conversation is relatively simple. If you look back through recorded history, there is no system, there is no economy on the planet that has not failed. None. Every major economy in recorded history has failed, and every single one of them has failed for the exact same reasons. It's not rocket science. We can get in the weeds and debate, you know, all the various things that brought about the fall of the Roman Empire, for example. Oh, they expanded too much. They tried to do too much. They got too big for their britches. That's true. But the question becomes, was that the cause or was that the effect? And I believe that history, viewed from a monetary standpoint, leads us to the one conclusion. The expansion of the Roman Empire was the effect. The cause was the loose monetary policy. Yes, but what caused that breakdown, Mike? See, that's the point. You have to take it back to a point of singularity. When they realized that they could hypothecate money. Again, also a moral decline. Again, the moral decline, all of it, you can trace directly back to easy money. When we devalue the value of money, what we're actually devaluing is people's time. And humanity itself. We devalue humanity. All based on money. That's why if you go back and read your scripture, you'll find that the love of money is the root of all evil. Not the money itself, it's the love of money that is the problem. And here we go again. So when money is easy, cheap and easy money, people behave badly. Risky behavior is commonplace. Guess what happens? You fall into the trap of money, right up to the point that you are so dependent on all of the luxuries of life that comes with all that easy money that you will fight to the death to keep it. Nothing new. This is nothing new at all. And I'm telling you right now, if you turn back the clock and look at the history in this country, just in the last 10 years, or the last, well, since 2000, okay? If we look at the created bubble, or bubbles, multiples, not with an eye towards conspiracy, not with an eye towards New World Order, but just from a common sense standpoint of human nature, without all the terrible possibilities that go along with what we know is going on. But let's just look at it from purely a monetary standpoint. They're not stupid. They know that the monetary system is headed for a brick wall or a black hole, one or the other. Mike, I appreciate you tuning in, sir. God bless you and take care of those babies. So they see the writing on the wall. Now, we have a world banking system, a central banking system that's already in place. They can see the trend and where things are headed. It doesn't take a genius to forecast what's coming around the bend, and that is a monetary collapse. A dollar bubble, some people have called it. And it does really truly hinge on the U.S. dollar because all the other currencies in the world are tied directly to the dollar. They're all measured. The U.S. dollar is to the world banking system what gold and crude oil is to the U.S. dollar. It's the basis. It's the standard by which everything else is measured. Even when they try to tell you that it's gold isn't money, it's just a commodity, it's an old relic, so on and so forth. Well, they're just whistling past the graveyard. They know it. I know it. Whether your money is paper or a coin or seashells, the only thing that matters is what you can purchase with it, what you can exchange it for. And therefore, your money is measured in terms of value in purchasing power. How much gasoline can you buy? How much rent can you pay? How much automobile can you purchase to get you back and forth to your job? They know that the day is shortly coming when the monetary bubble is going to burst. They're reaching what I've talked to about on the show for years past, critical mass. There's no more expansion for the system. And a central economic system, central planning, that works on a debt-based currency relies on one thing solely for its existence, and that is the ability to expand the debt into new and unforeseen territory. They're all out of room. They're industrializing third world nations as rapidly as possible to try and dump some of that debt onto those countries. And of course, those countries and the people that are caught up in that, they see a presumed benefit because their standard of living increases exponentially. But when compared to, say, someone who's a working class poor, or not even a working class, but just flat poor in this country, the middle class in many third world countries, there's no comparison. I forget who said the quote, but it was an Indian fellow, and in talking about being poor, he wanted to come to America, and he told his friend, I want to live where the poor people are fat. That's America. And I believe we have Miss Linda on the line with us. How are you, Miss Linda?
Fine, thanks, Ron. When you're talking about this critical mass, what is it going to look like, and what besides massive inflation? I mean, are they going to have
it really,
how will it
you know, it really depends. I don't know. I know what it could look like. I mean, it could look like Zimbabwe. It could look like the Weimar Republic. It could look like Argentina. It could look like Brazil.
And how do they reset it, or does it just completely go into chaos?
Well, they never really did reset down in Argentina. They're still having issues.
I mean,
if you want a modern-day example of the collapse of a nation's currency, go read about Argentina. You know, everyone, or most everyone, I presume, has at least familiar with the song, "Don't Cry for Me, Argentina."
Yeah.
Okay? That song is about the plight of that nation's economy.
Jeez. And that's going back a few years. Wow.
That is absolutely central economic planning run amok, and it destroyed their economy.
Sure. Well, it's a form of national socialism and fascism, and that destroys the nation quicker than anything, and they came to find that out, and we're about to find it out. I just finished Hayek's Road to Serfdom, and he totally talks about statism, totalitarianism, and central planning, especially central economic planning, because it doesn't stop there, as we see with Agenda 21. They want to control everything. I mean,
well, see,
down to your toenails.
The issue we have with, say, Hugo Chavez, okay, in Venezuela.
Right.
It's not that our government opposes socialism. It's that they oppose anyone who opposes their central economic fascism.
Right.
And that's exactly what Hugo Chavez did. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to paint Chavez as a good guy.
No.
But I will tell you that I think Chavez, at least in his heart, has the welfare of the average and poor folks in Venezuela at heart. And he, in his mind at least, he was saving them from Argentina. Because you had in Venezuela this run amok crony capitalism. That's why he nationalized the oil fields. I mean, go, you know, most of us don't understand what's going on down there. I don't live there, so I don't know what the truth is. All I get is bits and pieces, just like everybody else, and you can't believe half of what you hear.
Yeah.
But there are some things I do know. I know that our government tried to have him assassinated on at least two occasions.
Wow.
And I know that the wealthy elite down in Venezuela were none too happy that he was elected.
Yeah. Well,
because
it
puts a wrench in their works, and he becomes king and not them.
Right. Well, it's the battle for power. I mean,
sure.
The only thing I do know that now that Chavez is in there on the stats is their GDP is a hell of a lot higher than ours at this point. You know, currently, I don't know where it's going to head.
I wonder why. Do you know that Chavez, this went like completely unreported years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I knew about it only because I followed the currency. If I hadn't been following the currency market, I would have never known that Hugo Chavez, we buy oil from Venezuela, a lot of it.
Right.
And Venezuela has a certain type of oil that's not very good to much of anybody except for us, because we have the ability to refine it into a usable motor fuel.
Right.
Because their oil is a pretty crappy quality. Well, we had Chavez on the same hook as OPEC. U.S. dollars is what we were buying oil from. So we were outsourcing our debt to Venezuela.
Wow.
By purchasing oil. Chavez took $23 billion and converted it to the euro.
Oh, my gosh.
And he told our government, hey, you want to buy my stuff? You got to come at me with some euros. I don't want no more of your dollars. Well, that poses a problem for the U.S. government, a small one, but a problem nonetheless.
Right.
And so we end up in a situation where we need to do currency swaps with the European Central Bank to get euros to buy oil from Chavez.
Unbelievable.
So we didn't like that much. And, you know, I was explaining to some of my guys today, if you go back into the 80s and you look at all the evil nations out there, each and every one of them has a distinguishing characteristic, or had. They weren't part of the world banking sorority.
Right.
They had their own bank, or they had none at all. Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Syria, well, not Syria, but Libya. See, they weren't playing the same game that the World Bank is playing. Many of them are now, not because they wanted to, but because, well, gee, that's how we promote democracy.
Yeah, right. They wanted, the central banks wanted control. Wasn't it Libya when you talked about it?
Yep.
Way back when, and they were the first thing they did. I mean, probably wasn't even 24 hours, and they got a central bank in there.
It was within 3 days. Within 3 days of the action by NATO against Libya, they announced that they had taken control of Libya's central bank, which, by the way, isn't in Libya and never was. It was in Qatar. And 72 billion of the dollars that were in Libya's account came straight from our Federal Reserve Bank before we went in.
Oh my God.
Even though they were under sanction and we weren't supposed to be sending any money over there. So you got to explain to me how in the hell that works. But that's digressing into a whole nother story. The threat that Gaddafi and Libya posed is that Gaddafi was successful in operating without U.S. dollars, in using gold as a currency, and he was successful in convincing some of his neighbors on the continent that they should also convert their currency to gold and begin selling their oil and their goods, not for dollars, not for, you know, euros, but for a gold denarius. Well, that was the final straw. We can't have that kind of junk going on.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You know, I saw just today I was actually waiting for Sally Fields to come on the report that I saw from CNN of all these poor little children over in Syria that are living in the caves.
Ooh.
Because I think they said something like 70 to 80% of the population in Syria has fled. Well, who in the hell's fighting then?
Oh, my gosh.
Who is fighting?
Oh, my gosh.
I'll tell you who's fighting. It's the government, the Syrian government, and they're fighting against, these. Now, this is going to sound awful familiar if you go back to 1979 in Iran. They're fighting against the freedom fighters. That's who Syria's government is fighting against. And the freedom fighters, well, they're not calling themselves the Mujahideen. That's too easy. No, they're calling themselves Al-Qaeda and the jihadists. And you have congressmen, Republican congressmen, advocating that we arm them.
Oh, my gosh.
Didn't we go through this already in Libya? Didn't we have this Benghazi thing? I mean, you know, Gunwalker, really? Mexico, you think that's a problem? And you want to arm? I thought we were in this perpetual war against Al-Qaeda. Why would we want to arm them? And it would seem to me, maybe I just don't understand the players in this whole game, but if we're at war with Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda is at war with the Syrian government, wouldn't that stand to reason that we would side with the Syrian government?
I think what Jerome Corsi was mentioning in his piece that I saw a few weeks ago was that what we have to wrap our heads around is our government in America is Al-Qaeda and is the drug-running cartel. This is, you know, this whole thing that's going on with the sequestration, everything else we have dealing with us, our monetary system and our evil corporatocracy, this is smoke and mirrors. These
exactly.
people are so corrupt, it's beyond words. And like what Mike was talking about and we were chatting about not paying taxes, I says, you don't have the percentage that you need, you know, to go up against this Leviathan. I don't have to pay taxes because I don't earn anything on the books, and there's no reason for me to file anymore because I just have Social Security, so I don't know them, they don't know me. It's stupid. It's a waste of paperwork.
Well, it's going to be a self-fulfilling situation either way. You know, it's not. This doesn't require all the people and the taxpayers in the United States to stand up and revolt, because we're fast approaching a time when there won't be enough doggone taxpayers to cover the bill. There isn't now. How do you think we got to $16.5 trillion in debt?
It's, yeah. I mean, look at the joblessness in this country. It's
right.
It's
and many members of Congress would have you believe that the problem isn't government, it's the people. It's these no-good bastards that go out and work for a living just aren't willing to give up enough of their property. That's why we're in this situation. It has nothing to do with Congress not being able to control themselves, and it has everything to do with the working-class man and woman in America, whether they be corporate or white-collar mm-hmm. or blue-collar workers. It's simply that they're just too damned greedy.
Yeah, because they look at us like ATM machines, as you said, and they do not believe that what you earn is yours. They think
no,
it's theirs.
It doesn't belong to you. How dare you? It belongs to the government. Just look at it. It has their name on it, for crying out loud.
It's sickening. It's just
it has all the past executives emblazoned on it. I mean, should there be any doubt? And in fact, it doesn't even belong to the government. It belongs to the government's banker.
Yeah, the banksters. Oh, my
They're
God.
They're just borrowing it, but it's for your best interest. And
of
that's
course.
Where the real danger lies. That's
exactly.
where the real socialism lies, in
mm-hmm.
the idea, in the permeating perception that everything that's being done is actually being done for your own benefit, your own welfare.
Yeah,
for your own good.
We're sitting on a powder keg, and when it blows, I fear massive civil war in this country, because there's a lot of people who are just, they're waking up every day, and they're pissed.
Look,
you know?
I've said it for a long time. At some point, and I don't know when that point is, I don't know if it's this year or next year or 5 years down the road, but at some point in time, all the folks that are riding on the gravy train
mm-hmm.
are going to pull into the station. They're all going to get off to go get their free gifts. And when they come back, they're going to realize that the gravy train has left the flipping station, and they're standing there with no transportation.
Yep.
The music has stopped, and there ain't enough chairs, and they're all left standing. And when that
yep.
happens, it's going to get ugly.
It
I
is.
Don't, you know, I don't own firearms because I think that my government is going to come charging in, and I'm going to have, you know, the Custer's last stand in my driveway. That's insanity. What I do believe is that
yep.
things could devolve in this country to the point where I need to be able to defend
right.
my ability to feed my family.
Sure. I see that coming. I'm just praying I'm in Indiana when it hits. God.
You know, and I think that's part of the reason. I think that's part of the reason that this television program, The Walking Dead, is so doggone popular. And, you know, everybody talks about the zombie apocalypse. But it's not so far-fetched. I mean, obviously the whole, you know, living dead is kind of facetious, but they call them eaters or biters. They call them biters.
Wow.
And everybody is infected, okay? But not everyone is a zombie. If you get bitten by one of the zombies, you'll turn into one instantly. If you die, you will turn into a walker, a zombie, a walking dead. So what they're doing is the people that haven't turned, if they should befall some accident and die, they shoot them in the head because that's the only way to end the zombie.
Oh, God, lovely.
So, you know, that's why the guy, when I was at the gun show, I was laughing at his T-shirt. He says, I can't wait till you're a zombie.
That's good. Oh, Lord.
But that's, I mean, is that not what we've done to our society? Is that not what we've allowed to happen to our society?
Yeah.
Is that we have at least 51% zombies out there, if you're going to base it on the presidential election results, at least.
Right. Oh, Lord. Right. Well, the other 49%, believe me, they are waking up, especially in California, because we were ahead of everybody except, you know, New York. I don't know what to say about that state. So we've already been living under his second term for quite a while.
And it's purely
so it's really
purely
devolving quickly here, and I fight it constantly. And I'm so happy that the guy that did the rally, Roger, he's going to try to take a stand, and I'll do everything from my computer to help him out. I don't have money, but I can get the word out, and other people can sign the petitions and let him take them by the box load, you know, the RV load up to Sacramento, because people need to have their voices heard and make some demands on these clowns. And I'm all for it. I hope it works. I hope he gets 500 people marching with him. That would be great.
Well, I think what we're seeing right now, with all the hysteria going on, and I, you know, a lot of guys don't think that it's called for. A lot of them think that it's just foolish mass hysteria. I don't see it that way. I think it's absolutely prudent that if you don't own firearms, you ought to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a personal choice that everyone has to make.
Right.
And but I think you're seeing a silent call to arms right now. And it's a preparatory phase. People are just trying to hold on to what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at government, like we were talking last night, you know, and kind of getting back on the topic where I was at. So you're the president, and you know that this black hole, this financial black hole, this monetary bubble is on the horizon. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter
it's
of when. You know it's going to happen. We've already seen, you know, the beginnings of it in Greece and Spain and Italy and France.
Italy.
Of course, that's not in the news much. Now, the British pound has been getting a lot of attention of late, and rightfully so. If they're giving it attention, you can take it to the bank. It's going to happen. We saw the U.S. dollar fall back today, but it recovered some, and it's a game.
Yeah.
But imagine that you're the president, and you're some of the members of Congress that are privy to the information, and you attend a G8 meeting. That's the great eight economies on the planet, the eight largest governments, and you all sit down, and your bankers come in. And they said, okay, guys, here's the deal. We got a problem. We got a tsunami headed for us, and we've got a plan in place. But it'll only work if we wait until the exact right moment to divulge the plan as a rescue. And it's going to get ugly, and it's going to have to get bad before people will readily accept it.
Oh, my gosh.
And the plan is a new currency, a new reserve currency that won't be just the U.S. dollar. It'll be partially gold-backed. Had this conversation on a couple of other shows, one with the late Bob Chapman. I know Michael's back with us on the line. That, you know, this whole idea of a 40% gold backing is to appease what they would call the quote-unquote gold bugs or hard money advocates. And we're getting back to that article that I talked about, the Chicago plan. Okay. So all of this is in the works. You're the president. You're Congress. You know this is coming. Why bother with a budget?
Oh, yeah. They know they're not going to need one.
Because, quite honestly, any amount of debt that you run up right now is going to be wiped out when we reset the currencies, the valuation across the board. It won't be wiped out for you and I. If you have a home mortgage, you're still going to owe. If you have personal debt, you're still going to owe. But the government will get to revalue its debt, write it all down, and everybody will start out. It's like the easy button. You just hit reset, and okay, we'll just start all over. Isn't this wonderful, boys and girls? We've saved you. We've saved you from ruin. How wonderful.
God.
Now, whether or not that works is another story. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got to play out. Lovely.
And we're seeing some posturing from some of the states. I've been talking with people about the, you know, this idea of nullification. It's been talked about since the Constitutional Convention. Jefferson was a proponent. Most everybody else that was in the Whig Party or the Hamiltonians were ardently against it. And the Supreme Court has shot it down a number of times, but that, you know, I'm not a believer that the Supreme Court is the final say on any damn thing.
Exactly. We are.
They issue their opinion, and that's all it is. It's an opinion. Here in Georgia, we have a situation where a local school board has run amok, and it's run amok to the point that the school is being threatened with losing its accreditation. And in the state of Georgia, the governor has the authority to kick their butts to the curb and impanel a new school board until one can be elected.
Interesting.
And that's exactly what he's chosen to do. He's given them their walking papers.
Good.
The problem is they filed suit in a federal court saying, oh, he can't do that. So now the governor is going to have to defend his actions in a federal court. Now, how could it possibly be a question of federal question? Well, because they receive federal funding.
Yep.
And so you see, now we're going to use the supremacy clause, which I'm not sure how all this actually plays out. When we look at the supremacy clause in conjunction with the incorporation doctrine. Because if all of the states are incorporated under the Constitution with the 14th Amendment, how can you really say that there's a supremacy clause? Because there really is not, if all the states are incorporated into the Constitution, there's only one government. It's a national government with a series of 50 bureaucracies or agencies run by the central national government.
It's
all just a bunch of semantics from where I sit.
Yeah. And it truly is when you look at all the first original Bill of Rights, and especially the 10th Amendment, I'm telling you, and all the clauses in the articles, these clowns for obviously 50 to 80 years have been just given the whole damn thing. Lip service, and they're playing us. They are playing us like fiddles, and it's horrible.
It's not. I don't think it's a mistake. If we go back and look at the era, the 20 years prior to the Civil War. If we look at the era coming out of the Revolutionary War. We look at the failure of the first and second central banks.
Mm-hmm.
We look at the resurgence of the central bank and then look at its death at the hands of Andrew Jackson. And what followed was states' rights, individual rights. And I believe that it was the death of the central bank that put the death nail, for the moment, in the victory of the Whig Party or the Hamiltonians. I think that pulled the rug out from under their feet.
Uh-huh.
And they had to start over. And
sure.
They weren't happy about it. And it gave a tremendous amount of power and leverage to the southern states and to individual property holders. And that's really what your Civil War was about in the end, was private property and the right to be free of these onerous tariffs and taxes that were being levied primarily towards the southern states.
Sure.
Slavery was just a political issue and used as a red herring or a ruse or a smokescreen to bring about.
Because at that time, wasn't slavery going to kind of die out on its own?
It was already dying out. My God, with Eli Whitney and the invention of the cotton gin, and I mean, slavery was on its way out the door and could have been handled very easily.
Right.
We essentially end up with the death of 600,000 plus Americans.
People. Right.
And out of that, during the Reconstruction, we create a huge divide in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We institute the first voter registration laws, which I find ironic when we look at it, because, I mean, honestly, the first voter registration laws were to ensure that freed slaves got to vote, but not free whites from the South who had participated in the quote-unquote rebellion. And now, what do we see? Who do we see railing against voter registration laws? But the very people that they sought to benefit.
Sure.
It just seems to have come full circle.
Yeah. Well, we're in a mess. What are you going to say?
And I see Mike's neighbor up there in Chicagoland. He's been calling for blacks to purchase property en masse.
Oh, my gosh. What's
that would be
the purpose
Mr. Louis Farrakhan.
Oh, my God. Oh, he's a
nut. He's also incorporating some of the Chicago gangs into his flock as the natural security force for the Nation of Islam.
Jeez.
Which is fine because they're in Chicago, so they can't be in possession of a firearm.
God. Yeah.
And
not,
we know they're
not
all
legally.
Oh, and look, we're talking about law-abiding citizens here. Now, let's not be stereotypical or racist in any fashion.
Oh, Lord. I don't know. Yeah, nobody has the timeline, but I know Mikey B said it was going to be 2015, and you and I are just guessing for the financial meltdown. I think you're right, it's going to get ugly. Again, I hope I'm not stuck in California when it hits. That's all I can say.
Well,
I want to be in them hills.
I mean, you know, history is being written every day, they say, and that's certainly true. I honestly believe that what we're living in the midst of right now is nothing short of the beginning stages of the collapse of government.
Wow.
Of the nation state. I think we're going to see it. It may come to fruition in my lifetime. It may take a little bit longer. But again, if you're a student of history, and you follow the collapse of governments.
Mm-hmm.
We're in those early morning hours when people begin to realize, uh-oh, The emperor has no clothes, and the wagon only has one wheel.
Exactly, yeah.
And you're going to continue to see this absolutely violent battle over how best to fleece the flock.
Oh, sure. That's what they're doing. So what I'm wondering is, hopefully by the time this thing does melt down, that others who are like our minds and have had some history learning, that they will come together and, you know, try to battle this mess. I mean, and really, really go back to that, you know, resurgence of what that beautiful idea of what America was or was supposed to be. So I'm just praying for people to wake up soon. That's why I do what I do.
You know,
I'm gathering my flock right now.
Michael had put out a lot of good ideas or suggestions on previous shows, and that is that, you know, number one, I don't think it's something you can truly fight per se.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's like a fleeting enemy. Which tentacle do you chop off first?
Yeah.
It's an insurmountable task. I think the best that we can do as individuals is prepare ourselves so that we can at least try to care for our family and friends and provide no matter what the situation is.
Uh-huh.
And one way, you know, something we talked about the other night, don't put all your money in the bank. If you got to use a bank, put just the bare minimum of money that you can stand to maintain an account.
Okay.
Keep the rest in cash, or better yet, in commodities.
Sure.
And those commodities don't have to be metallic. They can be edible.
Yeah, exactly.
Coffee, cigarettes, sugar, salt, whatever. Mm-hmm. Pick your poison, but spend your money wisely.
Sure.
And I see we've got Brian popped in with us. How you doing, Brian? And yes, good grief. Yeah, that is true. And, you know, trying to get back to the sequestration for a moment, and I had no idea, and these guys are such a bunch of bullshitters, okay? There is an article, Under the Mountain Bunker, which I'm going to put a link into the chat room. And Linda, having listened to me for a while, and I'm hoping that you'll at least, my audience will look at that article and see the symbology that's going on here in the picture with the deity of the sun and the tree of life. I mean, you know, it's very interesting, and the man reaching for the stars.
Mm-hmm.
But in talking about the sequestration, they have a picture of Boner crying, wiping a tear from his eye, and it's captioned, and it says, "Who voted for the sequester? ? Democratic votes, 0. Republican votes, 218. Well, that's a damned lie, because I have at my disposal the final vote results for the roll call on 677, and there were 218 Republicans that voted in favor of it. You can rest assured that number's accurate. There were 188 Democrats that voted against it. There were 5 that didn't vote, and there were 5 Republicans that didn't vote.
Wow.
And so the vote was 218 to 210, and if the 10 folks that didn't vote voted in the negative, it wouldn't have got passed.
Wow, that's amazing.
Because you'd have had 218 yays and 220 nays. So rather than focusing on the 218 and the 188 that voted, we ought to be asking these 5 people, Maxine Water,
oh, Kinchy, God,
Spear, Giffords, and Baca, hey, what the hell were you doing and why didn't you vote?
It's amazing. Oh, what, I can see water. She's a communist. Forget socialist. Oh, my God.
A waste of
flesh. And the whole thing, I mean, they're not even talking about real cuts. Don't they go by a baseline budgeting situation?
Yeah, but
they're
not cutting
anything. It's just bull crap. You're right. I mean, unless you say, you know, your budget is $1,000 and they're going to cut 20. I mean,
well, let's remember, some years ago I told all my listeners that any time, and I mean this sincerely, any time you hear the word budget, pull your britches down, lift your skirt up, prepare for the smoke because it's going to get blown right up your tailpipe. When they talk about budgets, they're talking about smoke and mirrors and nothing more.
Yep.
It's all nonsensical. Start talking about budget deficits, I could solve the budget deficit with the wave of an ink pen. Okay? It has nothing, it has almost nothing to do with nothing. It's only an issue when it's a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And how does Congress fix a budget deficit? They budget to spend more. And your deficit's gone.
It's ridiculous.
If they just simply appropriate more money, woof, it's magic, no more budget deficit because Congress appropriated it. And if you don't have a budget at all, how in God's green earth can you have a budget shortfall? You don't have a budget. It's open-ended. The sky's the limit.
And all these people that sit in those 535 seats get paid $170,000 a year by us. Go figure. Oh, my God.
I mean, let's look at what they're talking about right now with a budget deficit. There is no budget. So how can you have a budget deficit? Well, there's only one way. Well, no, there's only one way. You've outspent appropriations, period. You know what that's called? Unconstitutional, because no money can be drawn from the public treasury unless it's been appropriated by Congress. So how can you possibly spend more than what Congress has appropriated? How is that possible?
I know. Makes you crazy.
But Congress is imperative. Without them, we'd all die.
Yeah, right. We'd live beautifully without them at this point.
Look, what Congress and the president want you to believe reminds me of a joke that I told my father, a blonde joke. Congress believes that the American populace, we the people, we are the blonde, okay? And Congress and the president, they are the beautician. The blonde comes into the beauty parlor and wants to get a haircut. She's wearing a Walkman. I know everybody listening is old enough to know what that is. She sits down in the chair and the lady says, okay, well, if you'll just take the headphones off, and the blonde says, oh, no, you're going to have to just cut around them. You got to leave those on. I can't take them off. I'll die. The lady looks at her and she's like, wow, she's kind of special, but what the heck? Customer's always right. So she's cutting her hair and she just can't stand it. So she snatches the headphones off the blonde's head and she grasps her throat, falls out of the chair, onto the floor, gasping for air, and dies. And the beautician is stunned. She's got to know what she was listening to. So she holds the headphones up to her ear and she hears, breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out.
Yep.
That, by the way, is my father's favorite blonde joke. But that's how you know that's how Congress sees us. We're the blonde, and without the congressional headset, we don't know when to breathe. So we will surely die of the narcissistic disorder is in full bloom.
Yep.
In our nation's capital. And it has, it's such a cancer, it's infected our state houses and our local town councils. And all of them are nothing more than a subsidiary, a political subdivision thereof, of the national government.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. If we're going to buy into the Supreme Court's opinion of the incorporation doctrine, then we have to believe that there is no such thing as state government.
That's why there's so much turmoil, because some of these people still want their state sovereignty.
Well, and that's what we're seeing, and I think that's going to be the confrontation, the real confrontation,
mm-hmm.
That leads to the collapse of the nation state.
Yep. I'm going to let you wrap it up and go back and check out the links. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Not a problem. Thanks for calling in, hon.
Be blessed.
Always a pleasure. God bless you, Miss Linda. Well, guys, that's been another show, an hour and a half, and another one in the hopper. Another one in the hopper, in the tank. And I guess I'm going to play us out a song to go out on tonight. And we'll see everybody back here tomorrow night, 7 p.m. for Patriot Families Chat, Wednesday night at 7 p.m. for Miss Linda with Right from the Left Coast. God bless everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for being in the chat room. And I'll leave you with a little parody from my favorite radio host, Mr. Mike Church and his gang.
Adams, Mason, Franklin, Gary, Ames, and Washington. Lee and Rutledge, Hancock, Wilson, White. Sherman, Adams, Hall, and Rodney, Penn, and Dickinson.
For the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence and the 37 who signed the Constitution.
And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Why you haven't read all the bills you filed. We'd like for you to read them for yourself. Look around you, all you see are patriotic guys. Stroll around the land, the brave and free gone. And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Hiding all your $1 trillion debt so we don't know.
Hide it in your made-up FICA trust fund.
Just the congressman will know. Worst of all, you pass this debt on to the kids. They think we're fools, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Ripping up our Constitution every afternoon.
Give themselves a raise with no debate.
Laughing